Intermediate Court of Appeals is now reconvened. The Honorable Craig H. Nakamura, Daniel R. Foley, and Alexa D. M. Frigise presiding. Please be seated. Case number 28742, Gary Suzuki versus Castle and Cook Resorts. TJ Lane for appellant and Milton Tani for appellee. Argument on the merits.
Morning, counsel. Ready to proceed?
Yes.
Please do so.
Good morning, members of the court. This court should reverse the Second Circuit Court's order granting defendant Castle and Cook Resorts motion for summary judgment for the following reasons. Under HRS section 386-1, Mr. Suzuki can have only one employer. Here, that employer is Lanai Builders. Now, under section 386-1, Castle and Cook Resorts could conceivably have been Mr. Suzuki's statutory employer had Mr. Suzuki been loaned or hired to Castle and Cook Resorts. But that is not the case here, members of the court. Here, there is absolutely no evidence that anyone but Lanai Builders was the statutory employer of Mr. Suzuki. Lest there be any doubt in the court's mind, let's look at Castle and Cook Resorts' only argument as to why it should be immune from Mr. Suzuki's claims. Castle and Cook Resorts argues that Frank versus Hawaii Planning Mill applies to Mr. Suzuki's case. In Frank, our Supreme Court held that the company which secured workers' compensation coverage was entitled to statutory immunity insofar as tort liability is concerned. But let's play pretend for a moment and set aside the fact that Castle and Cook Resorts never secured workers' compensation coverage. And let's look at two other important differences between Mr. Suzuki's case and Mr. Frank's. First, Frank involved a lending-borrowing employer relationship with a temporary employment agency. In this case, no such relationship existed. Second, in Frank, there were significant indicia of an employer-employee relationship between the plaintiff and the defendant, while in this case, there was absolutely no indicia of
it. Excuse me, Mr. Lane. Is there anything in the record that tells us how this job to, I don't know if it was to build or repair or what have you, the driveway that Mr. Suzuki was working on, how this job came about?
Your Honor, the only thing on the record is the deposition of Mr. Suzuki, who testified that he was assigned by Lanai Builders to work on this job.
And so we don't have anything in the record that resorts contracted with Lanai Builders or Castle and Cook or Mr. Murdoch contracted with one of these entities to do this job.
In fact, there's absolutely nothing about that, Your Honor. Now, members of the court, in Frank, the borrowing employer procured the workers' compensation insurance coverage for the plaintiff, where in this case, as I noted a moment ago, Castle and Cook Resorts did not procure workers' compensation insurance for Lanai Builders.
Mr. Lane, let me ask you a question. As I look at the Hawaii case law, there's a case involving a general contractor, subcontractor, in which the court says general contractor, not the employer, the subcontractor, so subcontractor can sue, subcontractor's employee can sue in tort. I think that's the Fonseca case. Mm-hmm. And then we have the Frank case, which is a borrowed employee, in which, given the circumstances of that case, the court concluded that the borrowed employee could not sue the borrowed employer under the statute. Now, this seems to be in the middle in the sense that this is an employee of a subsidiary. How do we analyze that given those two sort of outposts that the Hawaii courts have analyzed it? And if there's no Hawaii precedent, what do the other jurisdictions say in this particular fact situation?
You have to apply, Your Honor, corporate law. What Castle and Cook Resorts wants to do is do a reverse piercing of the corporate veil, and that should not happen here. In this particular case, Castle and Cook Resorts not only did not provide workers' compensation coverage to Lanai Builders or to Mr. Suzuki, but it also had no relationship whatsoever to Mr. Suzuki. What Castle and Cook Resorts has argued from day one, Your Honor, is that Castle and Cook Inc. is the entity that purchased the workers' compensation coverage. And somehow, because of that, then the corporate veil should be pierced, and Castle and Cook Inc., since it purchased the workers' compensation coverage, all of its subsidiaries, this is an international conglomerate, by the way, and it has dozens and dozens of subsidiaries located around the world, that all of its subsidiaries should then be immunized from third-party liability if one of the employees is injured.
So how does that fit into, I'm trying to put it in the context of the purposes of the workers' compensation statute itself. It seems to me that it's often stated that the workers' compensation statute effected a compromise. Employer gives up the employer benefits because cannot be sued in tort. Employee gives up the right to sue in tort in return for a sure compensation regardless of fault. If we look at that as being the rationale of workers' compensation, how would you argue that rationale applies to the situation? I mean, how does that show that it, I guess in your case you would argue that we shouldn't include the exclusivity bar of workers' compensation to this particular fact situation?
It's a fair and a good question, Your Honor. Let's look at the history of workers' compensation law in the United States, including Hawaii. Okay, to begin with, workers' compensation law was enacted really not so much as a compromise, Your Honor. It was enacted to protect employers. It was enacted so that if injured workers got hurt at work, they then could not sue their employers. It arose out of the train injuries, this is 100 more years ago, okay? So workers' comp law was enacted to protect the employers. The other part of the equation is in Hawaii, Section 386, it is permeated with the notion of it's a humanitarian statute, and all benefits of the doubt are resolved in favor of employees who are injured. Now, with respect to your question, Your Honor, I think the way it gets resolved is this, is Mr. Suzuki undisputedly worked for Lanai Builders. Mr. Suzuki never worked for Castle and Cook Resorts, and he clearly never worked for Castle and Cook Inc., which is neither a party to nor is there counsel for Castle and Cook Inc. In this matter. And so we just have an individual, Your Honor, who has a different employer. And the law is clear, is since Mr. Suzuki's employer was not Castle and Cook Resorts, Mr. Suzuki should be able to bring a third-party claim against it. If I may continue, Your Honor. If this court does not reverse the Second Circuit Court's order, then this will broaden the workers' compensation exclusivity, Your Honors, way beyond what the majority of the courts across the nation have decided, and well beyond what our own legislature ever intended. Indeed, members of this court, the majority of state and federal courts emphasize the doctrine of reciprocity, which requires courts to recognize separate entities when sued by an injured employee. Members of this court, if Castle and Cook Inc. takes advantage of the benefits of dividing its benefits or its business into many separate subsidiaries, principles of reciprocity require that this court also recognize the separate subsidiaries of Castle and Cook Inc. when an injured employee brings suit against one of the subsidiaries. It would be unjust, unfair, and illogical for Castle and Cook Resorts to be Mr. Suzuki's statutory employer. Now, Castle and Cook Resorts' only argument in support of its assertion of third-party tort immunity is that Lanai Builders did not purchase workers' compensation coverage for Mr. Suzuki. But neither did Castle and Cook Resorts. And it truly remains a question of fact, members of this court, whether Lanai Builders actually purchased workers' compensation coverage. What we do know is that Castle & Cook, Inc. paid the workers' compensation premium as a parent, but we don't know is whether the cost was charged back to Lanai Builders. What if it was?
In other words, you're saying that's a factual dispute, but assuming that factual dispute gets resolved, how would that mean that your client could not sue?
No, quite the opposite, Your Honor. That would lend factual support that Lanai Builders was his employer. Because don't you see, Your Honor, if Castle & Cook charges back the premium it paid to Lanai Builders for workers' comp, that means Lanai Builders has workers' compensation coverage for Mr. Suzuki. And so then we have the separate entities. But
then you think it's like the Frank situation where they actually paid for, they indirectly paid for the insurance coverage.
Well, that's what they're arguing. But our case, as I pointed out earlier, Your Honor, is entirely distinguishable from Frank. But that has been the argument from day one by Castle & Cook Resorts. Just a couple other things, Your Honor. The majority of federal and state courts have decided workers' compensation immunity from employees' actions in negligence does not extend to parent corporations. The general rule consistently applied by both state and federal courts has been to deny workers' compensation immunity on the ground that separate corporate entities of subsidiaries should not be disregarded.
Is there a minority view also?
There is.
And what's the rationale for the minority view, and why do you say that that's not a reasonable interpretation?
There are two states, basically, who have the minority view. It's Michigan and South Carolina. And the rationale is that it's kind of one of the same entity sort of reasoning. But even one of those states, Michigan, it's not so clear that their minority view is still in effect. There's a subsequent case of Betock versus Joaquin, which was decided in 1998, which throws a little bit of doubt on that minority view. But really, at the end of the day, members of the court, to thrust upon Mr. Suzuki an employee status to him, which he has never consented to, is unfair. It deprives him of valuable rights to sue a third party for his injuries. And for these reasons, members of the court, I respectfully request that this court reverse the Second Circuit Court's order of summary judgment.
What effect, if any, do you think that the fact that the parent corporation paid for the workers' compensation insurance has on our analysis?
I really don't think it should have an effect. Because, look, it's what Castle & Cook wants this court to do is to do a reverse piercing of the corporate veil. It wants to accept that it's responsible, Castle & Cook, Inc., because it paid the insurance. And therefore, because it paid the insurance, it has the immunity of tort liability. And I don't think that's the case. I think if the shoe were reversed, I think if Mr. Suzuki, for example, was making a claim for a violation of his civil rights, I think if he were making a claim for sexual harassment, and he made that claim to Castle & Cook Resorts, or even to Castle & Cook, Inc., they would step back and say, oh, wait a minute, we're not the employer here. It's only because Mr. Suzuki is making a claim for workers' compensation benefits and then a third-party claim that Castle & Cook, Inc. and Castle & Cook Resorts is saying, okay, yeah, we're the employer, because they don't want to pay a third-party claim.
Now, Mr. Lane, you're not asking this court on appeal to decide who the employer or employee is. You're just asking us to hold that the lower court erred in granting the motion for summary judgment because there's genuine issues of material fact. Is that it?
Yes, Your Honor.
So who is the employer, who is the employee, is for the lower court to decide with a complete record.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you have a test, either in the case law or based upon other jurisdictions, for in this context, what we should do to evaluate whether someone is a statutory employer or not?
I do, and that's a great question. If you look to the Frank decision, they give you a three-part test, Your Honor. Number one, there must be a contract of hire, express or implied, that existed, Your Honor, between employer and employee. Did not occur in this case at all. There's none of that. Number two, the work being done was essentially the same of the statutory employer. Not the case here. Completely different work. Lanai Builders was involved in the building construction. And you can look at the DCCA filing, which we attach as part of the record. Castle and Cook Resorts is in business for resort operations. It's a different work that's being done. And number three, Your Honor, the statutory employer had the right to control the details of the work.
Now, I noticed that the Frank, you're citing the Frank test for statutory employer, but the Frank test is based upon the borrowed employee situation. So your argument is that should also apply in the subsidiary situation?
I think so, Your Honor. I mean, actually, the Frank test that I just explained to the court, it's not really a test that Frank came up with. They cited an earlier court's decision.
Right, which is a borrowed employee situation.
Yes, and that was, I believe, a Utah case. It was Gearsy versus Salazar. But the definition of a statutory employer that we are using for today's purposes, it's good enough, Your Honor, to be used in our situation. And clearly, Mr. Suzuki was not the statutory employee of Castle and Cook Resorts.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, Your Honors. It's our position that Councilman Cook Incorporated is the company and entity that paid for this master insurance compensation policy for all of its subsidiary company employees. So that would include Councilman Cook Incorporated, Councilman Cook Resorts, Lanai Builders, and Gary Suzuki. And in this instance, the basic facts are not disputed. On December 18, 2001, Gary Suzuki was working with Castle and Cook Resorts employees. He was working on the driveway and he was doing some masonry work on the driveway. A truck was parked above him and the truck had a defective parking brake. The truck rolled down the hill and hit Gary Suzuki and he was injured on the job. He then filed a workers' compensation claim against Castle and Cook Resorts and the Lanai Builders, and he was compensated under the workers' compensation coverage. So our position is that because Gary Suzuki is an employee of several employers in this case, the question was whether or not there's who the statutory employer is. Our position is, in this instance, there are several statutory employers because he was working for Lanai Builders, he was working for Castle and Cook Resorts, he was working for Castle and Cook Incorporated, and they're all working for David Murdoch because that was his driveway that they were working on. So it's our position that Gary Suzuki was a statutory, but he was an employee of all three entities.
Well, why is your argument consistent with the policies and purposes of the workers' compensation statute?
Well, I think
in other words, given the purposes of that statute, we should consider employees of a subsidiary to in fact be an employee of the parent or the parent corporation.
Well, in this instance, Castle and Cook Incorporated is the one that provided the work coverage for everybody. And otherwise, you would have each individual subsidiary paying for its own work comp coverage. So that would mean that the Lanai Builders would have its own separate insurance policy. And under the DCCA ruling, it was allowed to give this company the right to self-insure itself for any claims involving workers' compensation injuries.
Well, what's the purpose of the separate corporate entities then, if you're arguing that they're all one and the same?
I don't think there's really much of a distinction. Each of them have designated functions within the company, so I don't think there's really much of a distinction.
I think that some of the case law from the other jurisdictions argue that, well, if they're going to benefit from the separate corporate form, then they have to accept the burdens of it. And the benefit is, I assume, limiting liability in various contexts, but the burden would be in a workers' compensation situation, the separateness would be observed, and an employee of a different subsidiary would have the right to sue the third party in tort. So I'm assuming that the company is, as Mr. Laney's arguing, is not willing to give up the benefits of the corporate separate entity formation in different contexts. So why should they not have to accept the burdens in the context of this case?
Well, I think in this case, it's because it's in the workers' compensation context, where the workers' compensation insurance policy covers all the different entities who are working on the same job. And Gary Suzuki was working on a project for all three of these companies. It's not a situation where you have a separate entity that's working somewhere else, as in the other cases show, where somebody was injured on the job at a different premises, and therefore he files a claim against the parent corporation. And in that situation, I think it's factually distinguishable.
Yeah, but in the prior Supreme Court case, the Fonseca case, where you have a general and a sub working on the same project, the court said they're different employers, so the employee of the sub could still sue the general. So how does the fact that they're working on the same project necessarily distinguish that from the Fonseca situation?
Well, in the Fonseca situation, the general contractor did not list Gary Suzuki, the plaintiff, as an employee, and it did not provide workers' compensation benefits for the plaintiff. In this instance, we do have that.
You mean he's an employee of the Castle and Cook Resorts? Mr. Suzuki is listed as an employee of Castle and Cook Resorts?
He's actually listed as an employee of Lanai Builders.
Right, so isn't that analogous to being listed as an employee of the subcontractor and not an employee of the general contractor?
Yes, that's true. But our position is that because the workers' compensation coverage covers all these entities, it's different from the Fonseca case. Because in the Fonseca case...
So the crux of your argument is because Castle and Cook, Inc., the top parent, paid for or self-insured the workers' compensation coverage for all its subsidiaries, that alone is the basis for saying that the whole company is considered one for purpose. Up the line to the top of the parent would be considered the statutory employer for purposes of workers' compensation coverage.
Yes.
And is there any cases that you have that support that notion?
Well, the Frank versus Hawaii Plating Mill case stands for a proposition that the employer that paid for the workers' compensation benefits should be entitled to statutory immunity.
But those facts are distinguishable because the employer in that situation, the borrowed employer, was actually working for that borrowed employer, not for the temporary employment agency that was the official employer of the employee. In this case, there's no dispute that Mr. Suzuki was in fact working for Lanai Builders.
Right, but he was also working for Castle Cook Resorts, or together with Castle Cook Resorts on the same project. And because they're all working together, it's not like a different situation where the contractors are separate. For example, if that Castle Cook Resorts truck was owned by a different trucking company, like Okada Trucking or whatever it may be, and that truck went down the hill and hit Gary Suzuki, although they're working together, then that truck would not be covered under this case because Gary Suzuki would have the right to file a suit against Okada Trucking because that's a separate entity and it's not covered under the same workers' compensation insurance coverage.
Even if the same insurance policy covers all the different corporate entities in this case, is there any evidence that Resorts paid for that coverage?
In the record, it just shows that Castle and Cook Incorporated is the one that made the payment for everybody below it.
So no,
it's Castle and Cook Incorporated that paid for everybody else.
So under your theory, if instead of being a Castle and Cook Resorts employee that caused the injury, if it was a Castle and Cook Inc. employee that caused the injury, the same result would be that they could not. Mr. Suzuki would not be able to sue the Castle and Cook Inc. employee in tort.
Yes.
So basically, every employee of Castle and Cook Inc. and all its subsidiaries would be immunized from liability under the workers' compensation program.
Well, not in every situation, but in our situation, in this case, all the employees were working together on the same project, and so therefore the tort immunity should apply.
What test would you apply for statutory employer? What factors would you apply in deciding whether someone would qualify or would not qualify as a statutory employer?
I think you have to look at the facts and see who the employee was actually working for at the time that he was injured. And in this case, Gary Suzuki was working indirectly for David Murdoch and all the companies that he owned.
Is there any questions of fact in terms of who he was actually working for other than Lanai Builders? And we have, you just said you have to look at the facts. If you have to look at the facts, then summary judgment isn't the vehicle, is it?
That's correct, Your Honor, but in this instance, the facts are not disputed. The facts are that Gary Suzuki was injured while he was working on the project for Lanai Builders, and a Castle & Cook truck rolled down the hill and injured Mr. Suzuki.
But that doesn't mean Mr. Murdoch was his employer, does it? Other than your theory that whoever pays for the insurance is immune. I mean, other than that, there's no evidence that he was working for anyone else other than Lanai Builders, regardless of who else is on the job, regardless of what the job is. I mean, if you want to say he was working for someone else other, isn't that a question of fact?
Yes, that would be a question of fact, but our argument is that it's not a genuine issue of material fact, because in this instance, the basic facts are not disputed.
Now, putting aside Frank, do you disagree with Mr. Lane's contention that the majority of other jurisdictions in this fact situation observe the corporate distinctions and would permit an employee to sue the parent corporation? In other words, the employee of a subsidiary would not be barred under the workers' compensation laws from suing the parent in the majority of other jurisdictions.
And that's true. In the majority of the jurisdictions, that is the case.
So you're asking us to adopt a minority view of under this particular fact situation?
Yes, Your Honor.
And your justification for adopting the majority view would be what?
Is that, as noted in the case of Aragon versus Clover Club, in that case, the parent corporation was entitled to tort immunity for all work-related injuries for all of its subsidiaries and subsidiary companies.
And the rationale for that decision was?
In this in that case, all the employees of both companies were co-workers, and therefore they're all working together. And that's similar to our situation. And this is not a third-party situation because, like I mentioned earlier, if the truck was owned by a different company, then it would be a separate entity, maybe covered by some other insurance perhaps. But in this instance, we have the same company truck being the cause of the injury to Mr. Suzuki. Nothing further, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Members of the court, I'd just like to address a few of the things that were discussed by Mr. Tani. The Aragon case that was just referred to by Mr. Tani, that's a Utah case, and that is distinguishable from this particular case. In Aragon, the parent corporation, which was Borden Corporation, paid all of the plaintiff's salary and benefits. Here, neither Castle & Cook Resorts nor Castle & Cook Inc. paid 1 cent of Mr. Suzuki's salary or benefits. All of Mr. Suzuki's salary and benefits were paid for by Lanai Builders, his employer. Also, in the Aragon case, which was cited to by Mr. Tani, the parent corporation, Borden, retained all supervision and control over the plaintiff. Here, it is not the case. The only people supervising Mr. Suzuki were Lanai builders.
Is that in the record? I mean, are those facts in the record for this particular job? In other words, do we know how many people were out on the job at the time, and whether Mr. Suzuki had a supervisor from Lanai Builders there, or whether there was somebody from Castle Cook Resorts who was the fourth person on the job? Do we know any of those facts in this case?
What we know, Your Honor, is yes, we do. If you look at the deposition of Gary Suzuki, he testified that, I'm paraphrasing it, of course, that he was sent to the job by Lanai Builders, he was hired by Lanai Builders, and I believe he testified that he was supervised by Lanai Builders. That is, he was told what to do by Lanai Builders. So yes, we do know that, Your Honor. A couple other points briefly, Your Honor. Mr. Tani argues to the court this morning that Castle & Cook, Inc., or David Murdoch, was Mr. Suzuki's indirect employer. You can't have an indirect employer in a workers' compensation setting under Section 386 of the Hawaii Revised Statutes. You can only have one employer. And the evidence in this case, Your Honor, is that that employer was Lanai Builders. Mr. Tani also argues that Castle & Cook, Inc. was self-insured. That's actually not technically correct. It is true that Castle & Cook, Inc. had self-insurance retention, but it was only up to a specified limit. Over a certain limit, then there was excess coverage purchased, apparently, by Castle & Cook, Inc. The other thing I wanted to point out, Your Honor, is with respect to the argument made this morning by Castle & Cook Resorts, it has been and continues to be unable to support or cite any statute or legislative history which provides that a self-insuring corporate parent is the employer of its subsidiary workers. Now, as I listen to the arguments that were made by Mr. Tani, it is quite apparent that what Castle & Cook Resorts is asking this court to do is to adopt a minority opinion or the minority position. It is also requesting that this court pierce Castle & Cook, Inc.'s corporate veil and say that Castle & Cook, Inc.'s corporate identity, its separate corporate identity, and all of its subsidiaries should be disregarded. That's what it's saying this morning. And leaving aside, members of this court, for a moment, the fact that Castle & Cook, Inc. is not a party to, nor represented by counsel in this action, such a piercing is typically done only when the corporate fiction has been used to perpetrate a fraud or defeat a rightful claim. For these reasons, members of the court, I again request that the Second Circuit's order granting summary judgment be reversed.
Can I ask you a practical question? So in this case, say the lawsuit goes forward, Mr. Suzuki recovers from Castle & Cook Resorts. Would he then have to repay Lanai Builders for the work comp benefits that he received that are duplicative of the tort liability that is found by the court?
That's a very good question, Your Honor. In fact, if you look at the moving papers by Castle & Cook Resorts at the lower level, they sort of suggested that Mr. Suzuki might get a double recovery, but that is absolutely incorrect. Pursuant to Section 386-8 of the Hawaii Revised Statutes, Lanai Builders is entitled to an offset of the workers' compensation benefits it paid Mr. Suzuki. There will be no double recovery. Okay. Thank you, members of the court.
Thank you. Take the case under advisement.
All rise. Court is now.